waiting his words for transmission to Earth, to the headquarters of the New Morality in Atlanta, the covert financial backers of the Saturn mission. Wilmot was the only person in the habitat who knew where the funding for this experiment had come from, and he intended to keep the secret entirely to himself. His reports back to Atlanta were private, coded, and sent toward Earth by the automated laser system, not by the habitat's regular communications links. The man Eberly has formed something of a clique around himself, Wilmot continued, which is more or less what I had expected. The scientists have formed a countervailing political force led by Dr. Urbain. Frankly, Urbain seems more interested in personal flattery than politics, but he seems to be the acknowledged leader among the technical types. Even the engineers have organized a political bloc of sorts. Their leader seems to be a Russian exile named Timoshenko, although he insists that he has no interest in politics. Yet he's allowed the engineers to brute his name about as a candidate for the chief administrator's position. Frankly, I doubt that he has one chance in a million. There have been a few scuffles here and there, but by and large the political campaigning has been remarkably free of the usual hooliganism, which is a little short of extraordinary when one considers that the bulk of our population is made up of dissidents and freethinkers who got themselves into trouble on Earth. I believe the reason is that most of the population doesn't care a fig about this political campaigning. Most of the people here have absolutely no interest in their own government. In fact, they try rather hard to avoid any commitments of any sort. Wilmot leaned back in his comfortable swivel chair and reread his words from the image displayed above his desk. Satisfied with his report so far, he continued. In 3 weeks, we will have the general elections that will bring our new constitution into power and elect the individuals who will form the new government. Eberly is the odds-on favorite. I shall have to install him as the new chief administrator and gracefully retire to the ceremonial role of president. I suspect that Eberly will name Urbain to some important-sounding but innocuous position, probably deputy administrator or some such. I have no idea of how he'll handle the engineer, Timoshenko. Some of the people around Eberly frankly give me the willies. He's surrounded himself with non-entities who believe themselves to be quite important, such as this Viborg person who's now running the communications office. I know that the Morgenthau woman is a high official in the Holy Disciples. Why she volunteered for this mission is beyond me. And this Kananga fella, he's positively frightening. Wilmot talked on, bluntly giving his opinions on each of the major players in the habitat's coming elections. He would have been much less free with his judgments if he had known that every word he spoke was being picked up by molecular film microphones and recorded for Eberly's perusal.
Late in the afternoon, the cafeteria was quiet, nearly empty. Most of the lunchtime crowd had left, and the dinner rush hadn't started yet. Manuel Gaeta sat with three others at a table near the holo window that showed a view of a pristine lake in the Rockies, a picture from distant Earth taken long before the greenhouse warming had driven millions from their flooded cities to makeshift refugee camps in such regions. Of the four people talking intently together over the remains of their lunches, Gaeta was the only one who looked anywhere near happy. "We can do it," Gaeta said firmly. "It would be awfully dangerous, Manny," said Chris Cardenas. Nadia Wonderly nodded her agreement. "It'd be like trying to walk past a firing squad that uses machine guns." Gaeta shrugged carelessly. "All I gotta do is go between the bullets." He turned to von Helmholtz. "What do you think, Fritz?" Von Helmholtz cast a cold eye at him. "Isn't it enough to do what we came here to do?" Gaeta said, "We'll do the Titan gig if we can get the scientists to allow it. But while we're out there, why not do a spin through the rings?" "Because you could get killed," von Helmholtz snapped. Spreading his hands as if he'd proven his point, Gaeta countered, "That's why people watch, Fritz. They're waiting to see if I get killed." "What is worse, you'll ruin the suit," Gaeta laughed. "There's a really strong chance that you would be killed," Wonderly said. "Not if you can pick out the right spot in the rings for me to traverse, a spot without so many big chunks." With a sigh, Wonderly explained, I'd have to study the rings close up for months, Manny. Years, maybe. We've still got a few weeks before we go into orbit around Saturn. Won't that be enough? I'd need all the computer time we've got on board to make any reasonable computations, she said. Plus, I'd need time on the big scopes, and Urbane won't let me near them. Von Helmholtz looked surprised. He won't allow you to use the telescopes in the astronomy pod? Wunderlich shook her head. Urbane won't let me have any time on the big scopes. They're all being used full-time on Titan.
All of them?
All of them, said Wunderlich. Maybe we can talk him into letting you use one, Gaeta suggested.
He won't. I've asked him more than once. Besides, I'd need a ton of computer time.
Maybe somebody else should ask him, said Gaeta.
Who? Cardenas asked.
Wilmot. Or if not him, maybe Eberle can swing it.
Again she shook her head.
Urbane won't listen to Eberle. He won't even talk to him. They're running against each other in the elections, remember?
Eberle, meanwhile, was sitting tensely in the living room of his apartment, which had become the command center for his election campaign. A bank of computers lined the wall where the sofa had once been, each machine humming with continuous recording of the conversations in every public space in the habitat, and quite a few private apartments and offices, including Wilmot's and Urbane's. I don't like this constitution, Morgenthau was saying. I never did. And the closer we get to putting it into action, the less I like it. Eberle studied her fleshy face as she sat in the upholstered chair on the opposite side of the oval coffee table. Her usual smile was gone. She was deadly serious. Why didn't you voice your objections when we were drafting it? He asked sharply. I thought Vyborg and Janssen were thrashing everything out satisfactorily, and then you made it clear that you wanted an end to their arguing. With growing impatience, Eberle said, I've explained it to all of you time and again. As long as the emergency powers clause is in the Constitution, all the rest of it doesn't matter. I still don't like it, Morgenthau insisted. Eberle thought he knew what the problem was. Morgenthau was no fighter. She was an agent planted on the habitat ostensibly to help him, but actually to keep watch on him and report back to the Holy Disciples. Someone high up in the hierarchy must have finally reviewed the new constitution and told her that it didn't suit the stern moral standards of the disciples. She would never oppose me like this, Eberle said to himself, not unless she's under pressure from her superiors back on Earth. It's too late to change it now, he said, trying to keep his voice calm, even. The people vote on it in 3 weeks. Morgenthau said, You could withdraw it. Say it needs further work. Withdraw it? Despite his self-discipline, Eberle nearly shouted the words. That would mean we'd have to postpone the election. Morgenthau said nothing. How can I get her back on my side? Eberle asked himself. How can I make her see that she'd be better off following my orders than the stupid commands from Earth? Listen to me, he said, leaning forward in his chair, bending his head closer to hers. In 3 weeks, the people will vote. They'll accept this constitution for the very same reasons that you distrust it, because it promises individual freedom and a liberal, relaxed government. Without any rules for population control, without any moral standards, those will come later, after the constitution is adopted and we are in power. Morgenthau looked totally unconvinced. As I've explained more than once, Eberle said, straining to hold on to his swooping temper, once I'm in power, I'll declare a state of emergency and suspend all those liberal laws that bother you. How can you declare a state of emergency if everyone is satisfied with the Constitution? We'll need a crisis of some sort. I'll think of something. Morgenthau's face looked as hard as steel. You were taken out of prison and placed in this habitat to form a proper, God-fearing government. You are not living up to your end of the agreement. That's not true, he protested. Inwardly, a panicky voice whined, They can't send me back to prison. They can't. All we need to do is generate a crisis, he said aloud. Then Kananga and his security teams can clamp down. It won't be that simple, Morgenthau said. The more power you give Kananga, the more he will seize control of everything. I don't trust him. Neither do I, Eberle admitted, silently adding, I don't trust anyone. And then there's this Cardenas woman working with nanomachines. They're the devil's spawn, and yet you